Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. I have had a number of people email and call and tell me, you need to get Mike King back on the radio. And I was thinking, well, I've been wanting to for a while. And lo and behold, Mike sends me an email, says, hey, I got a new book and you want to talk about it. And I said, well, by popular demand, let's get Mike King on. So here is my buddy and author, Mike King. Mike, welcome back to Power of Prophecy.
Jerry, always a pleasure to be with you and carry on the mission of the late, great Tex.
Yes, sir. Now, you've been a busy beaver. You have.
Yeah, I have lately. Yes, I have.
You wrote a new book, and it's entitled Crash Course, 9/11 Inside Job, Debunking the Official Story in Just 1 Hour. And I love the cover photo with you with your fedora and your jacket with the collar up. You look like a gumshoe from the olden days doing some research.
That's actually not me. That's supposed to depict an undercover, a spy, a deep state operative.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I took it as you being a gumshoe and just digging into this 9/11 inside job.
Well, you know what? It could be, and now that I look at it, he could pass for an investigative reporter. That's true. It's another way of looking at it. But yeah, Crash Course 9/11 inside job. You know, this is still an important issue. Cause it's the type of thing if people wake up to the whole house of cards goes crashing down. But what I did with this, Jerry, is I managed to condense this big story into just, what do we got here? About 70 pages. That's it. And it's large print. It's lots of pictures. And, you know, it's great for mass distribution. It's great for somebody who's new to the topic because, you know, it's amazing, but we're going on what? 23 years ago now.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of young folks, you know, even people in their 30s, they were just still kids when this happened. So they definitely need a crash course. And there's a lot of stuff in here that even many seasoned 9/11 truthers don't know about. But it's a very powerful book and you can pick it up at my website, realnewsandhistory.com. Realnewsandhistory.com. You'll find it under the books section with my 29 other books. But it comes in paperback or PDF, realnewsandhistory.com. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yes, sir. So I have read quite a number of books on this topic, and it is 23 years ago. What compelled you to put this out there for everybody to read now, Mike?
Well, because it's been so long, and you know, it's almost becoming history now. It's almost like talking about World War II now or JFK assassination. And there's a lot of people who have forgotten stuff and a lot of younger people who don't know all this stuff, you know, because a lot of it's been scrubbed from the internet. And I just feel, just like with World War II, I feel it's just something very important to keep alive. And I do believe that this is going to come out when Trump returns. And I have reasons for believing that. And I hope that's the case. And when it does, people are going to need a crash course.
Amen to that. You know,
yeah.
There are so many untold stories that over time, things start slipping out. And truth starts a little here and a little there.
Right.
And the next thing you know, everything is exposed for the lie that it was. But by then, most people have, we are so self-centered these days, Mike, that all I care about is me. And what happened in New York in 2001, it doesn't affect me. But that would be a misnomer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure it does. I mean, it's, you know, in the big stuff, people, they don't think big picture and they don't quite see the connection between the big stuff and their own small lives. But it is connected. Because if you look at the problems people have as individuals, whether it's economic or family issues, okay, or the moral and the cultural, so many things that cause people to be unfulfilled or miserable or depressed, okay, you could trace it back to this big picture stuff, this cabal, this evil cabal that wages war on humanity. So, it does affect everybody, you know?
Yeah, it really does. There are two things that come to mind right now today with the rhinos in Congress just passing Section 702 of the FISA Act, which allows the government to spy on American people. And this is all part and parcel from the Patriot Act that W put in place almost immediately after the towers fell.
Yeah. And you know, that's something I cover in the book, how the big initiatives that came out of 9/11 came out instantly, which means that they were already there. It was like a chef prepared the meal. All he had to do was heat it up. Everything was ready to go. This Patriot Act, invasion of Afghanistan, they had the plans for the Iraq, the Department of Homeland Security, the TSA. It was all ready to go. And that was like a, you know, secondary part of it. But the main agenda was to project U.S. power, military power and force, and just maintain geopolitical control over Central Asia and also the Middle East for the Israelis. And in my book, I go into some of the stuff that people were writing in 1998, 1999, 2000. Very important, powerful people. People like Zbigniew Brzezinski and William Kristol at Project for the New American Century, all of these Jewish neocons, Council on Foreign Relations. There's a lot of these articles that the general public doesn't read, but they're meant for the inside club. You know, elitist journals. And this theme kept coming up. We see it now. You know, we would not have noticed it back then, but in retrospect, we see it. In 97, 98, 99, 2000, this constant reference to the necessity of projecting U.S. power into Central Asia and the Middle East and the reluctance of the American public to support something like this, unless there's some kind of foreign threat. And they kept throwing out that term, Pearl Harbor. Brzezinski used it. The neocons, Kagan and Kristol, they used it. Ashton Carter, Philip Zelikow, in an article written for Foreign Affairs of the Council of Foreign Relations, they used the term, Pearl Harbor. So it's coming over again. We gotta take over. How are we gonna do it? It's gonna be difficult. It took Pearl Harbor to get us into World War II. And then when you get into the summer of 2001, do you know what the blockbuster film of summer 2001 was? Hyped up, the biggest hyped up film? Hmm. Pearl Harbor, starring Ben Affleck.
Oh, that's right.
And Josh Hartnett. Do you remember that? That was July and August. And we know that the CIA works closely in Hollywood. It's all part of the deep state, CIA, Mossad, Hollywood. So this was, got everybody all geared up. They built up the Osama bin Laden boogeyman from 1998. They falsely accused him of blowing up American embassies in Africa. So they were prepping us with the boogeyman. They already had the boogeyman, Osama bin Laden, who's totally innocent. And then you had this movie, The Pearl Harbor, and it just hit. And all of a sudden, the American public, which all of these elites have complained about, that, you know, they're isolationist. This is American tradition. They never want to go to war. It always takes a Pearl Harbor. And all of a sudden, everybody's screaming for blood. Somebody's blood. Somebody has to pay. And that's the motive right there. The domination of Central Asia. And that's why we went to Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the expansion of Israeli influence. And the Mossad was heavily into this. Bibi Netanyahu and that crowd. And that's the motive and that's the purpose of 9/11.
Wow. You know, I constantly say this, Mike, and I bet you do too. Those who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it. And while you're talking, the first thing before you even said Pearl Harbor was FDR. W needed an FDR moment to get right. us into a war, to exert our military prowess. What other reason would you have for calling your attack on Iraq shock and awe?
Yeah.
Is because we want to project our power.
Right.
But it's not just our power. There are benefactors for everything that W did, and it wasn't the American people, was it?
Oh, no, we got nothing out of that deal. Well, what did we get? We got 20 years of war, trillions in debt, I think 5,000 dead young people, soldiers, another 2,000 dead young contractors, tens of thousands severely injured, brain damage, post-traumatic stress, and they're all on welfare now for the rest of their life. And then God knows how many people, innocent people, in these countries were killed and suffered hardships. And it would have gotten much worse, okay, had it not got bogged down in Iran, in Iraq. Because they thought it was going to be a cakewalk. And then they had plans to go to Syria, Iran, beyond that, Lebanon, Egypt, finally even Saudi Arabia, Sudan. This was all part of the plan. And none of it worked. But it doesn't matter. They still kept us there for 20 years. It wasn't until President Trump came along who ended those wars. And that's a big part of the reason why they hate him. So,
you know.
But yeah, what a horrible crime.
Yeah. And sadly, there are people that are suffering now that live in New York City. They're suffering from cancers.
Yeah.
Because one of the books I read was written by Victor Thorne, 9/11 Evil. The Twin Towers had been condemned because of asbestos.
Yeah.
And now you see all of the firefighters, the first responders that were on the scene are dying left, right, and center from lung issues related to the asbestos carcinogens that they ingested, they breathed in while they were trying to put out fires and rescue people. And did two planes really bring these skyscrapers down, Mike?
Oh, that is a physical impossibility. It's so impossible. And you know, Donald Trump, the next day, he was interviewed September 12th. This is back then. There's a video of this, and I quote him in my book. He says there's no way that planes could have brought those buildings down. They had to have had explosives in there as well. And he said that repeatedly. And it's quite obvious. And then you have a third skyscraper, which was not even struck by an airplane, 600 feet tall, massive skyscraper at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It came down perfectly into its own footprint, a textbook controlled demolition. The towers themselves were turned into powder and aerosol. I mean, there was nothing left. My brother-in-law was a volunteer fireman. I remember he went to the scene. He told me he was there. He brought home a few pebbles. He says, there's nothing there bigger than these little pebbles. So the entire two man-made mountains turned into pebbles. dust that had to be snowplowed off of the streets of southern Manhattan, and aerosol that just smoked into the air. So this is some sort of exotic, super powerful weaponry that took out these buildings. And if there was a mini nuke that's taken out the basement, that also would account for your radiation sicknesses. And then, of course, with the asbestos, asbestos, a piece of asbestos isn't carcinogenic, but if it's pulverized and turned into dust, it is. And that's what those explosions did. So, you know, between the radiation and the pulverized asbestos, anyone breathing that in, I mean, the truth death toll by now is probably 3 times or 4 times as high.
Yeah. And you know? The thing that gets me, Mike, is how nobody ever said anything. You would think that towers that tall, when they collapsed, wouldn't just come straight down, but it would take out half of Manhattan.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen that way.
No. It was, it, if you watch the slow motion collapse, not just of Building 7, but also the two towers, which are a quarter mile tall, as the building is falling, the lower floors are popping out, eliminating the resistance. So they did this so cleanly that they essentially brought down both towers straight down at free fall speed too, by the way. If you watch the video and you calculate 1100 feet, 10 seconds, it's almost the speed of free fall. So imagine, Jerry, if you dropped a bowling ball from the roof of the Twin Tower at the precise moment that the collapse initiated, the bowling ball and the whole of the tower would arrive at the street at almost the same time. Now that's a physical impossibility. Because that would mean zero resistance. Why no resistance from the bottom 90 floors? You know?
Right.
But this was blown up. And in my book, I show how they did it. There were Israeli art students who had access to the building. There was another art group from Austria that was given access, that snuck into the building and lived in there. And they were building a balcony on the outside. And all this is like, is backed up even by mainstream media. They had access. You had Larry Silverstein, who owned the lease of both World Trade Center 1 and 2 and 7. That all collapsed. And he was very close to Bibi Netanyahu. And I've got all the documentation here as a newspaper story from Haaretz, Israeli newspaper. It said that Netanyahu and Larry Silverstein used to talk every Sunday. I mean, well, what are they, like girlfriends or something? Every Sunday for like a year. So, yeah, I mean, the Israelis were all over this. And of course, Larry Silverstein, who was – has breakfast every morning at the Windows of the World restaurant on the top floor of the North Tower. That particular day, he's on his way out the door. And as the story goes, my wife reminded me I had a doctor's checkup. And I told her, oh, not today, honey. But she put her foot down and it saved my life. And then his son, Roger Silverstein, and Lisa Silverstein, they also work with the father. And they were not there that day. So all three, the probabilities of that being an accident is astronomical. It's zero. I mean, they knew. And he was part of the planning.
One of the books that I read, Mike, actually, there was a company that was owned and staffed by Jews on a, I don't know, 30-something floor, 40th floor.
Yeah.
And they were all sent company-wide email saying, don't come in to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
Odigo workers received that. They all got the same message on their phones. There's another company that actually had offices in the World Trade Center called Zim Navigation. Sometimes you'll see their shipping containers on the highway, Zim. 9th largest shipping container firm in the world. It's Israeli. It's half private and it's half Israeli government owned, Zim. And 6 weeks before 9/11, they moved out. They broke their lease. They moved out and they moved to Virginia. And then later on, they said, oh, we were so lucky. And they gave the reasons that we wanted to save on rent. We had moved to Virginia. So, I mean, you just see this over and over. And, you know, this was the handiwork of the Mossad and the CIA. And, you know, there was a dual agenda there. The globalists wanted Central Asia. And the Zionist Jews wanted us to go and take out Iraq for them. And then Iran and Syria, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Didn't hurt Larry Silverstein one iota. He was insured out the hilt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he cashed in big time. So
he got a double indemnity out of the deal. They counted the plane crashes as two events. So he got reimbursed for the World Trade. Then he somehow did it again. So he found a way to make money on that deal, a lot of money. I mean, that's not the motive, of course, but that's like a nice little extra thrown in, you know?
If you're the Mossad and you want, and you're in cahoots with W and the neocons in his administration, and you need an event that is going to foment a war feverish pitch with the American citizens, what better opportunity than take out these Twin Towers?
Yeah.
If you benefit financially from it, well, yeah, of course. If the Mossad comes to me and says, look, we're going to take down your Twin Towers, Larry. I know you're the leasee and basically lease these buildings, but why don't you go ahead and get your insurance all set up, and then we're going to pick a date and we're going to implode your building. You know, this is the Mossad talking. Then
right.
What's he going to do? If he's in cahoots with Bibi, if they're tied as two thieves,
yep.
Of course, he's an Israel firster. This is just property. This isn't and the people that are working there, they're collateral damage. I could care less. But if I can
you imagine? Can you imagine that devil having breakfast with these people every morning, and then just one day on that day he doesn't show up? Imagine like the day before. I think it was a Tuesday. Imagine on a Monday, and he's having breakfast with all these people that he knows the next day are going to be killed. What a devil, what an evil bastard. But it wasn't like he had to even give up his building. He was inserted for this purpose because he had only acquired the lease months earlier. So they already had that in effect. Okay, you're going to acquire the building and then give us access. So he was acting as an operative all along. And I believe this goes back many, many years that they had this planned for this date in this moment in time, because it was really supposed to. I think in their mind, they had planned it not just to be a big event to advance their agenda. I think they saw it as the close. We're going to get our new world order, and we're going to get our greater Israel. We're going to do it by force. And it just didn't go that way. You know?
Yeah.
And Brzezinski even said in his book, he says, we've got to get in there, take control of Central Asia before Russia and China can become stronger. And that's exactly what happened, because now that whole region is no longer a U.S. puppet state. Okay? The dominant players, as they should be, it's their backyard, are countries like Russia, Iran, and China. So their whole new world order, not only 9/11 failed, but their whole new world order came apart. And I believe when Trump comes back in there, he's going to fix the world, because next time around, you know, he's going to have authoritarian power. I mean, this is part of the plan. But it's interesting, because over the years, starting with the day of the attack and up until the present time, Trump makes repeated coded messages and references to 9/11. I really think that this is like a, you know, hot button issue with him, that he wants to expose this one day. We'll see when he comes back. So, but there's a lot of stuff you'll learn in here. I talk about Beverly Ecker. She was a widow. Her husband was killed on 9/11, and she was one of the very few surviving family members who refused to take the payoff money. Because that's what they were doing. They were paying off the families on the condition that they didn't sue. So it's kind of like hush money. And she wouldn't take it. She kept asking questions. And 3 weeks after she met with Obama, she dies in a plane crash. you know, she was becoming a real problem with this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Their agenda is bigger than any one person. So that, yeah. You know, the sinister and the heartless, they're almost psychopathic killers in the sense that they have no feeling for anybody but themselves. And that's the mindset. I mean, if you look at the protocols, Mike, I mean, it's already laid out for this Zionist agenda, and it just depends on which button we're going to push.
They don't care. You know, for these people to kill 1 million people, to kill 100 million people, to kill 1 billion people is nothing. And we know that if you read my book, The Bad War, what they did in World War II, they just exterminated humanity like they were killing cockroaches. They didn't care. You know, they drop atomic bombs on Japanese cities full of women and children just for the fun of it. The war was already over. You know, what they did to German cities, even after the war, they were still murdering millions of Germans. So, you know, and a lot of them worship Satan. The more killing, the better, the more power, the more they glorify their deity, which is Satan.
You know, I talked with Pat Shannon. He's another author. And we talked about what happened in Germany after World War II. And Patton was going to expose all this, but he became expendable, kind of like the lady that wouldn't take the hush money. And she demanded answers, and they have to be eliminated. And it's if you put the pieces of the puzzle together and you start connecting dots, you see the trail of blood that leads in one direction.
Yeah.
And it's not beneficial for Americans. It's beneficial for one ethnic group of people. And, man, Mike, it just, you know, having read about Silverstein and how he benefited, and listening to people talk about the implosions. And if you bothered to look at the raw footage that was put out there for everybody, you saw explosions on steel girders that held these twin towers up just before that section would collapse upon each other.
Yeah, that's right. As the building's collapsing, 100, 200 feet below the collapse, which is happening rapidly, you see floors popping out. Okay? So that's accelerating the collapse. Floors which were not even impacted, top to bottom, were being popped out. I mean, it was just, perfect. But in my book, I explain how they had access. There were teams of art students in these buildings. And what's interesting, Fox News actually did a series after 9/11 on Israeli art students and what they were up to. And then they had to kill the series. It's Carl Cameron. But they were all over the country visiting federal buildings. And, you know, a lot of them were like arrested and interrogated. And it turns out they were military people. A lot of them had explosive knowledge. I mean, they were running wild in this country, and they were going to blow stuff up. And I'm convinced that they blew up the Oklahoma building. I think that was a Mossad operation for sure, because it fits perfectly. We know Israeli so-called art students were visiting federal buildings, and they were staking them out.
Yep, taking pictures and everything. It's I want to get to the Israeli art students a little more on the second half. We have already flown through 30 minutes. My guest today is Mike S. King, author of an outstanding new book, Crash Course, 9/11 Inside Job. We're going to take a brief pause, and when Mike and I come back, we're going to keep discussing this very powerful topic. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. I want to tell you about an outstanding 2-volume set written by Mike King entitled Planet Rothschild, The Forbidden History of the New World Order. Volume 1 encompasses 1763 to 1939. In this volume is a unique blurb-by-blurb chronological and photographical review that will enrich your depth of historical knowledge. It's like no other work of its kind. From the days of the American Revolution to the Jacobin French Revolution to the coalition wars against Napoleon to Andrew Jackson's war on the central bank to Karl Marx's war on sanity to the Civil War to the Red's shocking wave of 19th century assassinations, to the conspiratorial founding of the Federal Reserve, to the horrific First World War to enslave Germany, to the Rothschild communist subversion of Russia's Tsar. At the heart of this self-perpetuating network sits the legendary House of Rothschild, the true owners of Planet Rothschild. Through an alliance with other billionaire families, universities, corporations, think tanks, and media moguls worldwide, this cabal has for 250 years manipulated world events and political players like so many pawns on a global chessboard. Volume 2 encompasses World War II through 2015. This volume covers the years of the horrible World War against Hitler and Japan, to the Cold War, to the JFK assassination, to the women's movement, to the global warming hoax, to the fall of communism, to the 9/11 attacks and the war on terror, and finally to the looming confrontation with Russia and China. The common thread of the New World Order crime gang links all of these events together. Volume 2 will complete the picture of Planet Rothschild. You can order your copy of this outstanding two-volume set, each over 300 pages in a large format. $40 for the two-book set, $6 shipping and handling. That'll make your total $46. You can order your copy by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. Again, that's 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. If we miss your call, please leave your name, number, and a brief message, and we'll call you back as soon as we possibly can. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. We accept those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. There's an ad for Planet Rothschild right there on the main page. Click on it, put your name, address, charge card, shipping method, hit submit. We'll get it and get it coming to you. If you want to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. And you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. $46 postpaid for Mike King's outstanding tome on Planet Rothschild. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Mike S. King. Mike, welcome back.
Jerry, that half hour went quick.
Man, it it always does, especially when I'm having a guest on and we have the flow of conversation, but we cover so much ground and we've got a whole lot more to get to. But before we do that, I want you to give people your web address and your Twitter handle. And that way they can get a hold of you, they can get a copy of this right. book, and whatever else.
Okay. Well, my previous site was Holocausted, Real History Chen. I'm not there. You want to go to realnewsandhistory.com, and is spelled out, realnewsandhistory.com. First thing you want to do is get on my mailing list and get some of my free reports. This way you'll always get my updates, and we'll never get separated. Okay? And you'll see in the section where it says books, all 30 of my books are there, including this one, Crash Course 9/11, Inside Job. As far as Twitter, The handle is at Tomato Bubble, all one word, at Tomato Bubble. And the name is realnewsinhistory.com. So do follow me on Twitter. I put updates up there frequently. Okay? So, yeah, that's it. realnewsinhistory.com. And then at Tomato Bubble on Twitter. Also realnewsinhistory.com on Twitter is the full name. Okay? And then the section where it says books, you can get this book. All of my paperback books are also available in PDF format. Most of the content at the site is free, but the books are pay-per-view, as well as the anti-New York Times. And, you know, anyone who can support me, greatly appreciated, because I have been, to quote a term that the usual suspects like to use, I've been poisecuted so long. They've taken me off of Amazon. They took away my YouTube, my PayPal, but you know, we persevere with the support of good people, good readers. So, you know, to the whatever extent you can, also support me as well. You'll see the donation options. So that's the deal. realnewsinhistory.com.
I love the phrase you used. I've been holocausted.
Yeah.
Because at one time you were greattomatobubble.com. And I think that got taken down. Then you went to realhistorychan.com. That got holocausted. All of your payment options, YouTube taking you down and demonetizing anything that you did, everything they can do to squelch your truth-telling abilities has been implemented. Yeah. And you just keep coming back for more, Mike. And God bless you for doing it, because people need to know what real truth is and how to find it. I heard.
That's right. And my work is very unique, I have to say, because I weave history and news together. And that's very important, because when you understand the fake history, you have a better perspective of seeing today's fake news. And indeed, my motto at the website is fake history is the fake news that has passed into the rearview mirror. And like in this book, for example, I start out in the opening pages, I talk about the bombing of the King David Hotel, 1947. Okay, why do I talk about that? Because it was carried out by Jewish terrorists dressed up as Arabs, and they were caught in the act, and a shootout ensued with the British. But they were able to escape. Before they escaped, they hit the detonator buttons. So that's a very important precedent. It's a precedent for blowing up buildings and blaming Arabs on it, you see? So I talk about the USS Liberty, but that's what I do. I weave the history and the news together. But there's a long history, Jerry, of these Jewish terrorists and Mossad. They're very good at impersonating Arabs and getting Christian people to hate Muslims because of that. And it's, you know, I mean, your name is Jerry. Do you remember the old Tom and Jerry cartoon?
Yeah.
The cat and the dog. I think there's one episode, the mouse, he does a false flag on the dog, and the cat gets blamed, and this big bulldog goes after the cat.
Yep.
And there's little Jerry laughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah. I mean, how many people realize that Menachem Begin, former prime minister, was one of the commanders in the Irgun gang that just immolated Palestinians left, right, and center?
Yeah.
You know, nobody cares to do the digging back into history to research and find answers. And how many people really, Mike, have the gumption to ask the question to start with? Not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough. And having taken over for the late, great Tex Mars, I know how much he struggled to get the truth out there and how many people were just spiteful and hateful and backstabbing. And people that had one time called Tex their friend couldn't wait to pile on him. And, I mean, they've done the same thing to you. And anybody that wants to expose the truth has to deal with this. And that leads me to my point. Before we took halftime break, we were talking about the dancing Israelis and the yard students. And how many people are aware that these, and they were dressed up as Muslims, and they were filming the Twin Towers going down, and they were dancing and celebrating when somebody called the cops on them.
Do you cover that? Were the first arrests of 9/11, and they're the only arrests of that day. And in my book, I reproduced the front page of the Record newspaper, the Bergen Record, which is a major newspaper here in North New Jersey. It's right there on the front page, Attack on America, Bush vows to retaliate. Beneath it, there's a story. Here's the headline. Five men detained as suspected conspirators were driving a van after being seen celebrating the attack. Right there. There it is. Bergen Record. Then when you get into the guts of the story, it turns out there were Israelis. So five Israelis were arrested as conspirators on 9/11. How many people know that? They were held for 40 days. They were treated very roughly by the FBI agents. Because when you get to the local level and the field level, you know, those FBI agents are the good guys. It's when you get to the tippy top or the DOJ, that's where the corruption sets in. But imagine, Jerry, they must have believed something very fervently to hold these men for 40 days. And they kept them in solitary confinement. And they tried to break them. And then finally, the higher ups at the DOJ were able to assert themselves. And they were released and sent back to Israel. And we never got answers on that. So that's the story of the dancing Israelis. Now, the New York Times, they did they worked hand in hand with the DOJ. This is how they covered it up. This is October 8th. This is almost a month later. Headline, five young Israelis caught in the net of suspicion. But then you go into the article, and the Times explains it away that there was a big immigration bust after 9/11. They were rounding up anyone, illegal alien they could, Pakistanis, Arabs. And these five Israelis, they got caught in the dragnet, and conspiracy theorists are trying to make something out of it. But it's deceptive because they weren't caught in the dragnet. These were the only ones arrested on that day, September 11th. All the other ones were like several days later. And that's what they did. They tried to make it seem like, oh, they just got caught up. It's nothing. But no, these were Mossad agents. And they were multiple witnesses where they saw them celebrating, okay, was at a place in Jersey City which had a clear, unobstructed, if you want to see the Twin Towers, you don't see from Manhattan because, you know, you're in the middle of the forest there. You want to go on the other side, the Jersey side, and that's the best unobstructed view. They were there before the attacks happened. So they were already there. They knew it was going to happen. So those are the dancing Israelis. And for me, back then, the day of the event, I knew exactly what happened. I knew about these forces at work in the world. I knew who did it right away. But this year began to, this was the loose thread to begin pulling on and see how they did it, you know. And it just turns out that they had sent a small army over here of explosive experts and Mossad agents, and they used the cover of moving companies and art students to get access to these buildings. And very, very high up in the hierarchy, they were given a protective cover by people like Larry Silverstein and people like the Jewish neocons in the Bush-Cheney administration. So, you know, obviously they're not going to be able to penetrate so easily unless they have that kind of protection from high up, which they had. So they had all the bases covered, Jerry, everything.
Yeah, they didn't go into this halfway.
This was planned at least a decade in advance, at least. It's very similar to COVID, the COVID hoax, which was planned a decade in advance. So, you know, when the moment comes, I mean, I make the analogy to like, you know, I mean, I had an uncle who used to win a prize every year in his town for the most ostentatious Christmas decorations. Everything lit up, but it would take him days to prepare. But then when it's all set up and you hit the switch, boom, you see it all at once, but you don't see the prep work. There was prep work of at least 10 years going into this 9/11 attack. And there's some evidence to suggest that from the moment they built it, they knew this day was coming back in 1968 when they began construction. Mm. You know, So this was supposed to be their unholy war to bring on their new world order with a greater Israel right at the center of it. That's how big an event this was. But everything leads back to that, whether it's the dancing Israelis or that Israeli shipping company, Zim, that moved out just a month before. Larry Silverstein, I mean, it's every single stone that you turn over, there you find the usual suspects. And by the way, those are the same usual suspects who brought us World War One and World War Two, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah, the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
You know, and this Eretz Israel, Greater Israel, has, they talk about it way back with the first Zionist Congress. They want to establish this Greater Israel from what, the Tigris to the Euphrates, and that's the whole gist of what they're planning.
Yeah.
And if anybody is collateral damage, too bad, so sad. I mean, look what they did to their own people when Hitler tried to export them and get them out of Germany. They said, nope, we don't want them. You deal with them.
Yeah.
They're expendable assets. I mean.
Yeah.
And these were ethnically the same as the leaders, but they were useful pawns in the grand scheme. And, you know, another thing, you talked about what, Tower 7 coming down, and there were reports that BBC aired the destruction of Tower 7 20 minutes before it actually fell.
And yeah, that's right. Well, no, they had a reporter, and you can see this on YouTube. It's immortalized. There she is. She says, well, we've just been told the Solomon Brothers building, that's another name for it, before it was called World Trade Center 7, has just collapsed, and she's going on and on. And there it is. She's British, so evidently she doesn't know. But that same building, it's right over her shoulder, still standing as strong as ever. So they jumped the gun.
Yep.
You know, when you have so many moving parts like this and you're running these scams, you know, sometimes people jump the gun, but there's just no question about it. It was announced in advance. And, you know, how would you know a building is going to come down in advance? Does the building tell you, you know, I feel faint, I'm going to fall? These were just minor fires. And I'll tell you, Jerry, for anybody who wants to convince somebody who's new to this and skeptical, I would start right away. Show the video of World Trade Center 7. You probably, if you can't find that on YouTube, you find it on BitChute or Rubble. WT7 collapse. World Trade Center 7 collapse. And you see, I like playing this game with people. I do it all the time. I show them. I say, hey, I want to show you something. Tell me what you think this is. I show them, it's a building being imploded. I mean, where is that? I'm like, are you sure that's a building being imploded? Yeah, it's an implosion. And then you tell them, that's building 7. That was 4 o'clock in the afternoon on September 11th. Like, no. And that gets people to think. And if they're thoroughly brainwashed, they'll just say, oh, I'm sure there's some other explanation. You know?
Right.
That
leads me to my next question. Controlled media.
Yeah.
Have they been complicit in covering up this entire scenario from the general public?
Oh, of course. I mean, you can't have this without the media, which is why, dating back to like the turn of the last century, there was a controlled systematic effort by these Jewish moguls to gobble up the media. 1896, the Oakes-Sulzberger family buys the New York Times, which, believe it or not, was a conservative Republican newspaper up until 1896. Okay? Eugene Meyer steps down from the Federal Reserve. Big Jewish mogul, buys the Washington Post. The CBS for 50 years was owned by William Payloff. Sarnoff at NBC. And then they just pass it down. All of the it's all Jewish mafia. And whatever's not Jewish is, you know, goes with the Jewish agenda. But the media was totally controlled, completely controlled. And otherwise, something like this is impossible. So that goes without saying. But then when you actually go into the names of these individuals and moguls, Hollywood too, and you begin to see it's always the same cast of characters. So it's a single mafia controlling the media and the banking system and Wall Street, the political parties and Mossad and the CIA. You know, I mean, this thing wasn't built overnight. And you step back and take like a 30,000 foot view of it. It's really astonishing what they put together. It's just a giant mafia, and it covers all the bases, and you had to. And that's why Donald Trump made such a priority of attacking them as fake news, because you have to tear down their credibility before you can even begin to start exposing this stuff. And we're still not there yet, but you know, the press isn't as credible as it once was. But I mean, they covered all this stuff up. And what happened, Jerry, is every once in a while, like a little truth gem will sneak through, like the story of the dancing Israelis that I talked about in that New Jersey newspaper front page. Well, guess what? The next day, nothing. Now, you would have thought a story like that, right? That the publisher of that newspaper would have said to the young reporter, Paolo Lima, hey, you're onto something here. Stick with this. Find out who are these people. No, the story disappeared. Here's another story that penetrated the media radar screens but was not given legs. I'm reading you a headline here from BBC News. Hijacker suspects alive and well. Remember how they had the names and the pictures of these suspects who were supposed hijackers all within a few days?
Oh, yeah.
Right? We find out, and this is from Bob Mueller, who was the FBI director at the time. He says we've determined that several of these hijackers had used stolen identities. And they tracked the guys down. And one of the guys said, yeah, I remember my jacket was stolen. I had my passport in there. So they had to set up years in advance. But there's a headline. Hijacker suspects alive and well. BBC. Los Angeles Times. I have this all reproduced in my book. You got to get this. Crash Course 9/11 Inside Job. At realnewsandhistory.com. Los Angeles Times, here's the headline, I reproduce it. FBI chief raises new doubts over hijacker identities. And it goes on and on. Now, you would have thought this would have been followed up on. Well, wait a minute. If they aren't the people, if the names and the pictures of the so-called hijackers are stolen, well, then who was on those planes? But no. So, you know, this is the thing, and you see this often, because the media moguls, they can't control every inquisitive reporter who works for their organizations, right?
Yep.
So all these truth gems will sneak through, but what happens is the next day somebody catches and says, we're not going to follow up on this, and that's it. You never hear about it again. So the hijackers are alive and well. And that's if, yep, isn't that something?
That is crazy. You know, I read something a while back, and it was concerning media and Jewish interest purchasing, controlling interest of most of them, because they were tired of being lambasted as the bad guy. And how do you control the narrative? You own the narrative. So what, the Chicago Tribune, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, all of these huge, I mean, the New York Times forever was considered America's newspaper, right?
Yeah.
So what better way to control, because back then it was just print and radio.
Yeah.
And well, Hollywood. But you control the print and you control the narrative and you control the message. And that's the beginning of expansion of fake news, controlling the media.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it in the first half, and it bears repeating. Fox News had a multi-part story on the Twin Towers and the destruction, and it was a dig. It was a deep dive, and it was amazing. But I think one episode aired, and it aired one time, and that was it. And everything else was squashed, put the kibosh on it.
Yeah.
That's why books like this are so important, to capture the headlines. And I love how you do that, Mike. You grab headlines and you put them in the book to show what they're actually saying, pros and cons. And you see the cover up right there before your eyes. If you're a doubting Thomas, this book would remove that doubt. And maybe it will spurn others to do their own digging, Mike. And let's get the truth, because the truth will be outed 100%, maybe not in my lifetime and yours, but eventually people are going to get fed up with the garbage and start digging for answers and find actual what happened. And this is a great starting point. It just, if we could only.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, it's, the subtitle is Debunking the Official Story in Just 1 Hour. This can be read in 1 hour, but I packed so much stuff in here. It's so powerful. It's such an easy read. People can get 10, 20, 30 of these to give out to people, to others. It really is an eye-opener for people who can handle it.
Therein lies the problem.
Yeah. Here's a quote I have in the book. I also have it on the back cover. This is from President Trump last summer. He was at a golf outing. ESPN was asking about Saudi sponsorship of the outing in the Saudi, were they involved in 9/11? And Trump wasn't having none of it. He said, there's a quote, "Nobody has ever gotten to the bottom of 9/11, unfortunately, and they should have. As to the maniacs who did that horrible thing to our city, to our country, and the world." And there's many other comments he's made over the years. Oh, Trump knows. He knows, but there was no way in his position that he was in a position to disclose this. You have to have maximum power. And I believe as this world starts to come unglued, I think by the end of this year, a lot of people that might surprise you are going to be begging for Trump to return. And when he comes back, then we can put final judgment on him. And I believe 9/11 truth is on his agenda. If you go to his Truth Social page, he put a new logo up a few months ago. It's his face. It's like a cartoon. It's got war paint, red, white, and blue war paint. If you look really closely, it says 9/11 on his face. It's painted on his face. Anybody who's got Truth Social, check it out. It's a 9, and it's got two vertical stripes that make the 11, and there's in the blue area, there's 9 stars. But there's a lot of this symbolism regarding Trump in 9/11. Let's see what happens when he comes back. But there's maybe we could talk about another show. I do believe there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about where some of these bad guys are being dealt with. So, but if and when that day comes, people are going to need, they're going to need to know the story, and this book is ideal for that.
RealNewsAndHistory.com. Bookmark it in your browser. Visit it daily. Get on Mike's mailing list. And Mike, we have flown through an hour, brother. I appreciate you taking the time to come on and be a guest of Power Prophecy.
Well, always a pleasure. And hello to all you folks who keep writing me saying, when are you going to be on Power Prophecy again? I promise not to be gone so long next time.
For sure. Mike, you have a great day, brother. I appreciate you taking the time. God bless you, my friend.
All right. Same to you, Jerry.
Thank you, brother. Okay, that's going to take care of this week's program. My guest has been Mike S. King. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.